590, The Fan. History at the NHL draft and history at the ballpark, the Major League ballpark, that nobody wants to go to. It's the Fan Morning Show with Justin Cuthbert and Brent Gunning on Sportsnet 590. The Fan on a baby Friday. Good morning, Brent.
How are we doing? Fired up. We got draft takes to give. We got free sweatshirts yesterday at the Joe Carter Classic. Still basking in the afterglow of that 9 a.m. hour. If you missed it, go get that pod from yesterday. Carter, Batista, Kadri, Phaneuf. Not bad. Going to have a great show today. Kipper, Wagner, Redman, Forfar. Pretty good. I got to be honest. If you're following up days like that, you're never going to beat it. That is pretty good. Following up the NHL draft last night, or at least the first round of it. Got some takes on that to give out. And honestly, just fired up. Happy baby Friday to everybody out there.
The crazy thing there, Gunner, is that you forgot two Maple Leaf captains we casually talked with as well yesterday. So three Maple Leaf captains, Nazem Kadri, plus the owners of the two greatest home runs in Blue Jays history and two
together
of the most legendary home runs, honestly, in Major League Baseball history. So it was a great day yesterday. We will try to follow that up. But as much as we're like reminiscing over yesterday, we're also like ruining our own actions while being there, because
I'm ruining your actions. I was trying. Hustling.
No. We're both in this together because do not even go there, because you were at the reception the night before.
I was.
And you're openly telling people, yeah, I didn't talk to anyone. Didn't want to, you know, bother anyone.
Didn't want to
mix it up. Just wanted to watch the ball game. Just wanted to watch the Blue Jays get beat down by the San Francisco Giants.
Cards on the table. If I knew what our boys, James and Pierre, that we spoke to off the top looked like, you better believe I would have been schmoozing them. I didn't need to schmooze Joe Carter. I knew we were going to get the chance the next day. I didn't need to bother all the celebs, but if I knew what James, so this is really just like a warning shot for those guys next year. If I'm involved, I'm coming for you at that reception, and it is not going to be a morning of, hey guys, I was wondering if you got a spot. No, we're going to lock that down the night before. So you can lump me in a little bit. That's fair. I'll take this. But if we're doing blame pie, 25 for me, 75 for you. You're too sheepish.
I will take that, because I am completely incapable of schmoozing. It's maybe my biggest weakness in the world. I just cannot do it.
We should have a reverse schmooze off to see who's worse at it, because I'm pretty bad. I got to be honest. I'm pretty bad at it.
And while both of us are bad, our partners, our normal partners here at Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ailish being mine, Sam McKee being yours, are brilliant at this.
Awesome.
They
schmoozers.
Know how to exist in public spaces and just, you know, capitalize on opportunities if opportunities present themselves. Unlike us, we are incapable of doing that.
Very true. I was trying, grasping at straws, all of them slipping right through my hands. But awesome, awesome day. And again, if you missed the pod yesterday, go check it out. A couple Leafs captains that I did leave out, but I cannot stress enough. That 9 a.m. hour yesterday, loaded. Fired up to talk about other things today.
Included in that 9 a.m. hour, Jose Bautista did promise you a driver at one point. It did not happen. But Jose Bautista at one point,
there was
a belief that Jose Bautista was going to secure a new driver for you, which would have been the story to end all stories.
I think I could be wrong about this. I'm sure the answer to this is 0%, but I think there's a 2% chance that my pointed questions and criticisms of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. might have nuked any chances of that. He was, and hey, look, you ask a question to get an answer. He was answering and did not like any criticism of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. So awesome day yesterday.
Which is fair, yeah. And I think we'll bring that up a little bit in our conversation with Ben Wagner a little later. The Blue Jays 6-1 victors over the San Francisco Giants last night, so putting themselves in a position to win that series versus the National League West opponent in town tonight. But the big baseball story from last night is Domingo Herman of the New York Yankees, who threw the 24th perfect game in MLB history against the Oakland Athletics in Oakland. It was the first since 2012 when Felix Hernandez did it. He's the fourth Yankee to do it. And it's crazy because, well, Domingo Herman, I mean, like the first gut reaction, especially from a Blue Jays fan, would be like, oh, you did, Domingo? You threw a perfect game, Domingo? Can I see your hands, Domingo? Which is maybe fair. Maybe he's not the guy that everyone's cheering for. He's got a little bit of a checkered past as well. So I understand why there would be a little, oh, yeah, did you? Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's an interesting game because this guy gave up 10 runs to Seattle his last time out. Then he needs 99 pitches to get 27 consecutive outs in Oakland to throw a perfect game and make Major League Baseball history last night.
It's a Maddux, if I'm not correct as well, if it's 99 pitches under 100 there. That's remarkable stuff. And it is funny, right? The capricious nature of baseball. I mean, we know players will go through fits and starts, streaks and with plateaus and slumps in there. But there's also this where you just have a guy who just is completely locked in. Now, normally this is more of a hitter where you only need to do it for maybe 4-5 plate appearances in a game. Just remarkable stuff from what you see him there. And I don't think we can connect it, but it does let you know that a guy like Alek Manoah, and I know it seems weird to connect Alek Manoah to a perfect game, but you just mentioned it. What did Domingo Germán do his last time out? Got absolutely lit up. And it does go to show you that for elite guys, once something clicks or you just have it on that given day, and I understand maybe you think, oh, is Domingo Germán an elite guy? They're big leaguers. They're all elite athletes, okay? The idea of a guy like Manoah, should he be able to find something down there? It may just be as simple as a switch flipping. And again, I don't think we can get ahead of ourselves of expecting it, but it does give you just the little tiniest sliver of light at the end of the tunnel.
And if you are going to be cynical, like I was immediately when I saw this news, I
love
mean, Domingo Germán looked elite in a start against the Toronto Blue Jays earlier this year, looked completely unhittable, and then his hands were checked for sticky stuff, and he was removed from the ballgame. So I don't know how many checks he got last night. I'm sure he got some, because Major League Baseball is probably going to look at the guy who's been suspended for using illegal substances this year while he's carving up an opponent. But yet again, like that was on, you know, pretty late last night. Did not see any of the game, only the highlights. But I'm sure that Domingo Germán was checked. And it's funny because it's a guy who seems like he needs it. And then all of a sudden, maybe he didn't. And he goes 27 for 27 in terms of outs. Maybe the Oakland Athletics made it a little easy on him in the ninth inning. But we digress. Domingo Germán, 24th. Perfect game in Major League history. It's incredible that there's only been 24, honestly.
It just proves how special they are. I mean, we all, I don't know, everybody has one that sticks out for them. Mine is the Edwin Jackson no-hitter where he walked, I think, 9 guys or 10 guys in that.
Those
they might have hit a batter.
Those are kind of my favorite.
Those are kind of your favorite. But we sometimes get this, and we've had a lot of the team no-nos lately, and, you know, a lot in air quotes there, relatively speaking. Perfect game, something special, especially doing it in under 100 pitches, just remarkable stuff.
Yeah, so history in Major League Baseball and history, of course, at the NHL Draft in Nashville last night. And it's not history because there were no trades for the first time since 2007, but history because one Connor Bedard, who might be the next generational talent in this league, walked across the stage, put on a Chicago Blackhawks jersey, and his NHL career is now officially underway. It did get really...
Not going back to Regina, you don't think?
No, I don't think so.
Probably not.
I don't think so. I think we know actually what the top line will look like in Chicago next year with Nick Foligno, Taylor Hall, and Connor Bedard.
Nick Foligno ever going to make it into the same zone as those two?
It might be tough. It might be tough sometimes, but when he gets there, he'll support. He will support. We do know that he can do that. It did get interesting right after Connor Bedard with Leo Carlson going 2, Adam Fantilli dropping to 3. Those three able to take that classic photo where they're holding the fingers up of the draft selection in which they were selected. But the story for anyone who's not, you know, a hockey historian or someone who's a Chicago Blackhawks fan might be that, you know what, it wasn't that crazy of a day. It was not all that interesting given that there were no trades for the first time in my quick math would be 16 years.
For shame on you, NHL GMs. All I heard all week, we got rumors flying. This guy's in the mix here. Or the Sharks want to move on from Carlson. We got and not one team moved. I couldn't even get a trade back. I would have settled for a Bill Belichick-style trade, being the sexiest we could get in the first round. It's ridiculous. And I understand why it happens. The idea that in a loaded class, you never want to be the guy who traded away the pick that turned into X, Y, and Z. Think about how much we killed the Boston Bruins for having those 3 first rounders. They kept them all and just missed, and we kill them for that. So you don't want to be the team that does that. I understand how it happened, but I'm floored. When you look at how cash strapped everybody is across the league, I figured this would have been an opportunity for some buyers to separate themselves. I know that's a weird way to kind of think of things. We think of that as a deadline term, not an offseason one. But if you were a team that wanted to get better players out there, I imagine the first round pick you had could have been currency to do it. Now, obviously, you don't do that for nothing. It has to be a trade that makes sense. But yeah, I'm pretty surprised that we didn't see any movement. And again, forget about pick for player, just the idea of guys moving down. There was clearly trepidation to do that because you don't want to be giving up a couple of picks for one that ends up being so-so or whatever it is.
Well, it's a strategy that NHL teams have not adopted yet, really, the trade down, especially at the top of a draft. Yep. I mean, Kyle Dubas has been doing it, but mm-hmm. he's been doing it a little later in the first round. Yep. When he was the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And there are other guys who have done it, and we've seen it before. But in terms of, like, top 10, it's not something we see all that often, or at least it seems. Maybe that's a little bit anecdotal. But in, like, an NFL draft, if you're just not comfortable,
yeah.
you trade down, and you have someone every single time. And what's interesting about this draft specifically is that there was all the machinations for a perfect trade-down scenario. The Arizona Coyotes selected a Russian at number mm-hmm. 6, but not Matvei Mishkov. Wild. And there were teams, I would imagine, in the 7, not 7, I guess, because Philly got him at 7.
Capitals.
8, 9, 10. Exactly. The Washington Capitals, who were connected to Mishkov this entire time, would have had every opportunity to jump ahead and do it and steal from a division rival, mm-hmm. the Philadelphia Flyers, Matvei Mishkov, right underneath them. It's shocking that Arizona, and it's Arizona. Should we be surprised? I don't know. But Arizona goes out there and picks two Russians in the first, I think, 12 picks. Mm-hmm. Do not take Matvei Mishkov and do not add picks despite going completely off the board with a guy Jason Bukala liked mm-hmm. in Simachev, 6th overall. It would have been so easy, you would think, for them to be like, hey, Washington, you want Mishkov? Come get him at 6. Mm-hmm. We'll drop to 9. We know Simachev's going to be there because most draft boards had him in the 20s. Most mock drafts had him in the 20s. You should have been comfortable that you'd get him there. And it's not like the Russian thing was scaring them anyway. So maybe they should have picked Matvei Mishkov. But either way, it seemed like the perfect opportunity for a trade down scenario was there. But NHL teams seem allergic to it. I don't know if they just don't trust each other. I don't know what's going on, but they can't seem to wrap their heads around the trade down strategy, especially Arizona, especially early in NHL drafts.
I think it's pretty clear what's going on. These NHL GMs are acting like they always act. NHL GMs, to a fault, generally speaking, are risk averse. They will always take the safer route. I think the reason you've seen the flurry of trades you've seen is because there is no safer route. Everybody's capped out. You have to take these swings. But in the draft, you could just sit tight, hold your pick. There is nothing that makes you have to do it. And I think that this is just a byproduct of, you know, we always talk about groupthink and there's a culture in any given sport. But I think in hockey, it exists maybe more so than any other of, as opposed to swinging for the fences, not wanting to be the guy who strikes out. And you just see that to a man last night. And I think that's why you saw the lack of moves that you saw, because NHL GMs just do not, they would rather just play it safe and not make the mistake then swing for the fences and have the chance to hit a home run. And that's why, honestly, I think that's why you saw Mishkov fall the way you did. We know what the top three was, and I know people like Will Smith, but, you know, we were talking to Bukala yesterday. There's definitely questions about that player as well. So even the idea of Mishkov falling all the way to 7 just shows the kind of risk averse thing as well.
Yeah, and Mishkov probably did end up in the perfect spot because Philly finally is taking the long drawn out mm-hmm. scorched earth route. They are actively disbanding, which means Mishkov showing up in 3 years is probably a great thing. Oh, where perfect. He can join a group that is being built slowly and give them an immediate shot in the arm when he's ready to come over. So Philly finally doing things right, which is not par for the course because it's not what we normally see from that franchise, which is taking, again, the conservative approach or the right approach under Danny Briere.
Generally speaking, when the guy who used to be in charge is sitting on the desk, not a good sign that things were going well there, generally speaking.
Generally speaking, yes. Okay, so we probably went too long, almost 15 minutes here, without mentioning that the Toronto Maple Leafs did make a draft pick. Of course, 28th overall is what they had, and 28th overall is where they chose. And we joked about how Brad Treliving, who couldn't be at the draft table until number 17 or after the Calgary Flames made their selection, was going to be hanging out in the rafters. Well, he might have made a meaningful connection in the rafters because Easton Cowan was seated near the rafters, and that's not a coincidence. Guys who are expected to go early in the mm-hmm. first round, well, they get premium seating, and a guy like Easton Cowan of the London Knights, a gritty, smallish forward, who's, I don't know if he's drawing comparables just yet, but in my eyes and what I saw and what I've read, maybe like a Konechny type where he's gritty and intense and, you know, talented and fast and a winger and all those things sort of fill into what the scouting report looks like. But he was seated way up top for a reason. And it was a bit of an off-the-board pick. It was a bit of a head-scratcher immediately. Some people are slamming the pick. Others are finding solace in the fact that, yeah, he's come on a little bit late in his major junior career, shown signs of real potential, has some of the attributes that this Maple Leafs team has not had, at least across the board, for the last several seasons here. So people are finding a way to like the pick. People are finding a way to slam the pick. But facts are facts. He was sitting near the rafters. It was a bit off the board, and it was a bold stroke from Brad Treliving with his first real move, I guess, as the Maple Leafs GM.
Yeah, I'm looking at, you know, I pull up Cowan's Elite Prospects page here, and, you know, they have a consolidation of tons of different rankings. I'm just going to rip off some of the numbers you see for where this guy was. 70, 66, 118, 70, 78, 89, 53. Correct me if I'm wrong. None of those are in the first 32 picks of the NHL draft. So, hey, you make a swing on a guy you like. I'm not going to sit here and tell you Easton Cowan, good pick, bad pick, based on the scouting report you get on the player. You can understand how Treliving gets there. And to your point, the idea of a guy taking a big leap, this is kind of the Matthew Nyes blueprint a little bit, right? Now, he went the other way, that he fell because he didn't have the draft year he was expected, and you saw what happened afterwards. So if this is a guy who can have a big season, I know he spent a lot of time in Junior B the last couple of years. Now, if he's a kind of full-time knight going forward, you can see the roadmap to where this is a super effective pick. But I'd be lying to tell you that my mind immediately went to, now, this is a culmination of everything we saw yesterday, but okay. So the Leafs fired Kyle Dubas. Now, there was a lot that went into that, but that is what happened, okay?
Yep.
Just to bring back Sheldon Keefe and probably give him more money, overpay a little bit in dollar and term on a bottom six guy in David Kampf.
Which we'll get to in a sec.
We'll get to that in a sec. And take a guy under 6 feet tall in the first round of the draft that people didn't have going until much later. Are we sure the guy with the glasses couldn't have just done that? Like, I have no problem with the team taking new direction. I have no problem with Treliving. I would just like to see the move. And I understand it is technically early, even though it feels like he's been the GM for 10 years already. I am still waiting to see the move that shows me this is a different slant. This is a different angle. This is a different move than what the last guy probably would have done. So that is just, that's the interesting thing to me. And again, to your point, 5'10 doesn't mean 5'10. There are very different versions of 5'10 players. There are 5'10 players who play like Travis Konechny. There are 5'10 players who play like a guy who's 6'5 and Pierre Engvall, okay? So it doesn't mean that you're not a physical guy or anything like that, but I'd be lying to tell you if that's not where my mind went seeing that pick last night.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this guy, as you mentioned, played recently in Junior B, seems to be a late bloomer, someone who's rising, at least in terms of being an NHL prospect, 100%. Anyone, though, I mean, there's some people who are going to have a good idea of what this player is.
For sure.
I think he's completely undefined at this point because of his sort of late bloomer status here. But there are so many people talking about this pick and very few who actually know Easton Cowan very, very well and
good
what
name.
His potential
I'll give him
is.
That.
Great name. A slam dunk name.
We have talked a lot about guys our age and things hitting us perfectly. You know, we talked to Carter and Batista about this yesterday. A hockey player named Easton is just for guys of roughly our vintage, just really hits home. It does.
What did hit home? What did hit home for me yesterday, or hit hard, I guess, yesterday? You know, as I mentioned, not many. I don't know how many people actually know what they're talking about. Jay Fresh, though, is a guy on Twitter who does some work.
Like
I respect
stuff,
his work 100%, and you know can basically simplify a lot of the data that's coming in and give you some basic, easy to understand stats, statistics, percentages, whatever data that can help you evaluate a player. And there are two numbers that stood out in his rough analysis of Easton Cowan, per Jay Fresh. Projected chance of becoming a star, 1%. Projected chance of becoming an NHLer, 4%.
Awesome.
And when I saw that, you know, that's freakout territory, right? That is freakout territory, 100%. But, you know, these things aren't carved in stone. 100% are not carved in stone. A lot of that data would be from a time when he wasn't expected to be or wasn't thought of as an NHL prospect whatsoever. This is an accumulation over time, and where Easton Cowan is now is not where Easton Cowan was to start this past year, was not Easton Cowan when he was playing Junior B, and when his draft and development, or his development rather, his curve, was affected heavily by a pandemic. These things are not as simple as that, but the Maple Leafs clearly identified this guy and ranked him higher than most teams and analysts did, and they took a swing with a late first-round draft pick on a guy that was not expected to be a first-round draft pick.
And, it takes two to tango. You need a partner in here. But much like we said with everything about Arizona, if you're going to take a guy who a lot of mocks had going in the 20s at six, if you're going to take a guy who a lot of mocks or prospect lists have available in the second round, why not try to trade down? But as we saw, I'm sure there are a lot of teams gun-shy on that. I am not accusing Brad for living of sitting on his hands and not making any phone calls. I'm sure they called around, but
it's tougher there.
It is tougher there because
Kyle Dubas did it a lot.
So now different world in this draft.
He's also erasing like Peter Mrazek while he was doing
and
things
this,
like that.
This draft in particular is different. There have been a lot of people talking about not just the top end of it, but the depth throughout. So it does make trading down a little harder. But if we're going to kill the Coyotes for not doing it at six, probably something the Leafs should have looked at. And I bet you they did. So I'm not accusing them of not, but it just would have felt like, again, another kind of perfect spot there. But you need somebody to need their guy there, and it's harder to feel like if he's on the board at 28, why won't he be on the board at 34 or whatever the pick is?
A couple more draft notes before we get into things we know a little bit more about, one being David Camp, the other being Pontus Holmberg, and all the other things that seem to be going on here with Brad Treliving and beyond. Dudes forgetting names. Carey Price had the viral moment of the draft, forgetting David Reinbacher's name while getting the honor or being handed the honor of announcing the fifth overall draft pick. But more important than that, and it is connected to the fifth overall draft pick in some way, Barry Trotz really wanted to make something happen. Every report was that Barry Trotz was ready to shoot from the hip, was ready to get something done, was ready to make a mark, not only in his first couple weeks here as an NHL GM, but also as the host of the draft. And apparently he tried really, really hard. And it's interesting because, there might have been the opportunity there at six, you would have thought, with Shimachev. But maybe Arizona didn't want to do that.
Yep.
In the same, we discussed that earlier. Well, but it seemed like he wanted to get into the top five.
Well,
and
I think
Askarov was out there, and the top five teams, rather, they didn't balk at it. They moved forward with their picks. And I wonder if Montreal, in the end, after getting, the top defenseman in the draft, are going to regret not springing for Askarov if that was on the table, because Askarov is one of the, if not the premium goaltending prospect outside of the NHL right now. And it was very, very tantalizing coming into the draft that Askarov, who was a lottery selection just a couple years ago, was out there if someone wanted to jump at it.
Yeah, we talked to Bukala about this yesterday, the idea of taking a goalie high. It takes a massive, massive believer. And I think that outside of those teams you were asking, having been a believer when he was available 2 years ago, he has done nothing in his pro career other than raise his stock. Everything he has done is just buoyed him even as more of an asset. But if you were not a team that was super invested in him as a prospect then, I just think with everything we've seen, with the way NHL teams look at goaltending going forward, it is so hard to put your faith in a guy who hasn't done it at the NHL level. And I think that's why it's tough to kind of use him as the big trade chip there. If that is a blue chip forward that's, killing it at the University of Michigan, you can sign him coming out this year. And I'm not using a particular player. I'm just saying a college guy or some prospect who's playing in the O that you really feel strongly about. Maybe it goes differently. And again, it just goes back to the frustration I have of, I would love to know what a top five pick in the NHL draft is worth on the trade market. Is it worth Askarov and, 15 or whatever other pick the Preds had? It sounds fair to me. I don't know. It's very interesting thing, but we continue to have this just lack of information on what it's worth. And I think that's the other confounding part of it, is that we see it all the time at deadlines where, okay, the price gets set for number one center or the best center available. It's this. So the next guy is probably going to go for just a little less. we don't have the price set for a top five pick in the NHL. And I think, again, to the point I made about NHL GMs being risk averse, they don't want to set the price and either overpay in a big, big way. Obviously, they'd gladly underpay, but, you know, that's the risk on the other side of things. So I think that's the problem with it, is you have teams that are so hesitant to be the price setter either way with that.
That Askarov's name is out there just because, you know, it was out there because he wanted to make, he being Barry Trotz, wanted to make a splash on draft night. It doesn't mean that, you know, Askarov's off the table right now. Like, Askarov gets traded this year or this summer, that's a fascinating deal, because I think this guy is very, very close to having a major impact. And, you know, it's not an exact science. It's not as simple, oh, he's a Russian guy and mm-hmm. Russian goaltenders are dominating this league. It's not as simple as all that. But this seems like a swing worth taking if you are a team, especially a team that has no pressure to win this season necessarily. If he's out there and you have a surplus anywhere else, it is worth making that phone call. If Askarov gets dealt, it will be fascinating to break down that deal. 590-590, text us. Let us know what you think about Easton Cowan. Include your name and location. I've been terrible at reminding you of that, but, you know, the text line is always open.
Probably throw
you can always text us.
Wake and Rake as well.
And Wake and Rake.
Truly brutal at that, always.
Send in your Wake and Rake selections. Let us know what you thought about the NHL draft, what you thought about Bedard, Easton Cowan. You know, those are the two big names from last night's festivities.
You're right. Those are the two big names, and you and I talked about this a touch as we were getting ready for the show. Just watching the draft last night, and this is terrible scouting. If I scouted in the NHL this way, actually, I feel like they'd give me a promotion. They probably should fire me. Just watching Adam Fantilli strut around that building last night, I feel like he maybe should have been the first pick. Obviously not actually, but he looks so confident. He just seems so assured of himself. He's just a big, tall weapon. He's a great-looking kid. You see him in the interviews, tons of composure. He seemed to have no care in the world, honestly, that he went second. Obviously, if you're supposed to go first, you probably feel a little differently about that. Second to third in the grand scheme of things, who really cares? It is a tough beat for him, probably sitting there dreaming of beaches in Anaheim, and all of a sudden he's, I don't know, wherever they hang out in Columbus. You could tell me on the text line if you know. But that was the guy I was honestly just so impressed by, just kind of watching his presence, seeing him in the interviews. Obviously, he had the great story of on his vest and in his suit, all the names that had helped him along the way. Mm-hmm. That's just like hockey guy to his core. But yeah, I was really impressed just seeing him in interviews and watching him walk around last night, which just seems like a weird thing to say. But I think you see very different guys on draft night. You see kids who look 17 years old and they're like, oh my god, this is crazy, there's a TV camera in my face. And Adam Fantilli felt like he was just sitting on his couch at home, seemed super relaxed.
Yeah, that's he did seem super relaxed. He just did seem super mature and developed beyond a lot of the kids that we were seeing, especially late in
that's
that.
A man.
And it was refreshing to see. I think you nailed it there. A guy that was supposed to go to went three, and it didn't faze him one bit. He seemed pretty happy, even though he's a Michigan guy going to Columbus with the Columbus Blue Jackets. Ohio State's pretty big there, so I wouldn't bring that Michigan helmet with you, or at least parade around in it if I'm you.
I mean, if he really,
Adam Fantilli,
if he really wants to endure himself, I mean, the guy went to Michigan for 1 year. He should just bring the Wolverine helmet and smash it with a sledgehammer outside of whatever they call their, oh no, never mind. He should shoot it with the cannon is what he should do, or shoot it out of the cannonball style. There is a big time opportunity for him to endear himself to the locals there.
It's worth asking if Brad Treliving is endearing himself right now to fans of the Toronto Maple Leafs. You mentioned it a little bit earlier. It seems like nothing has really changed. I saw a lot of familiar faces up there on the draft floor with him, or on the draft stage with him. And he's kind of fallen in love a little bit, just the same way Kyle Dubas did with some of his guys. The big news yesterday for the Toronto Maple Leafs, other than drafting Easton Cowan 28th overall, was the Maple Leafs extending David Kampf 4 years, AAV of $2.4 million. Gunnar, your thoughts?
A little too much term, a little too much money, in my opinion. You look at great teams, the only ones that give term and money to depth guys are ones that win. Now, I suppose you could say, hey, following in the footsteps. No. They pay the guys that prove they could help them win and are still in a window to continue to do that. I really like David Kampf. Depending on what else is on the roster, I like David Kampf as my 3C. when we saw him as the 4C at times, I loved that. But if you're making $2.4 million, especially on this team, you are not the 4C. So that is your third line center next year in David Kampf, and that's not a bad thing, but it is not a absolute slam dunk home run. I think the term and the money, like I said, if it was 1.9 for 3 years, I think we're all sitting here going, yeah, okay, good piece of business, no problem. The extra year, in the grand scheme of things, not a big deal. But with the 2.4, you would have liked to have got a win one way or another there.
I'm conflicted here because David Kampf is to me as Michael Bunting is to you, Brent Gunning.
The highest of praise.
I've been a big David Kampf supporter on the show, but context is everything. And $2.5 million nearly for 4 years is a lot of money. And honestly, I don't know how much of a discount that is, because if he went to market, that's kind of what I expected. $2.5 million across 4 years, $10 million total. So does he give up $400,000 over the course of 4 years? What is that really worth? Probably not all that much, or in fact, not all that much in reality. So I'm a little surprised that he was able to get this deal. I'm a little surprised that it wasn't a harder bargain for or from Brad Treliving. I'm okay with investing down the middle, but you're right. It's whether you're a third or fourth line center, which really tells the tale here. And I don't know if there's a guy who's coming up on an entry level that can kind of, play third line center.
Oh, okay.
While he's the fourth line center, right? Like he's paid like a third line center, mm-hmm. but if he's your third line center, how good are you really? You nailed it. If he's your fourth line center and he's killing a lot of penalties and he's keeping the puck out of your net and mm-hmm. he's taking defensive zone starts and turning them into offensive zone starts for Austin Matthews, he's worth $2.5 million. But if he's your third line center, it means your bottom six is doing very, very little offensively overall. And it seems like the Maple Leafs are okay with just accentuating existing realities and existing issues, which is there's not enough scoring on this team. You're investing a pretty decent chunk of money here mm-hmm. with term in a guy who's going to score between 4 and 9 goals. Like he's not going to go double digit on you. He could be completely shut out. If he might go double digit, that's not completely fair. If he's playing third line, he better be double digit. But you're forcing him through responsibility that is probably not best for him to get to that mark, right? The best scenario would be killing penalties, fourth line, converting D zone to offensive zone, and just making sure the puck's out of your net. That's David Kampf's value. And if he's forced to be a double digit scorer, if he's forced to play with offensive players, I don't know if this is the best investment.
I think the other thing that this guarantees is probably too strong of a term, but almost certainly locks in, is that they're not getting another center of impact here. You know, there was some talk about the idea, and, you know, obviously a potential Nylander trade would play into this, not necessarily in terms of the return, but just in what you do with the money, that maybe there is a thought of moving John Tavares to the wing and finding a way to get another center in there. That is not happening now. There is no way you're going to find a center that you feel comfortable making your second line center while allocating that amount of money to David Kampf. And it seems weird to say about 2.4, but that's how tight this team is. They just don't have the room to do it. And again, the thing is with Kampf, you really do like him as a player, but the whole point of him existing is that it's a bit of a punt. Nothing's going to happen out there. He's going to make safe plays, and he has shown the ability to have some offensive instincts, but you can't count on the line he's on to be a scoring line. And what's been the problem with this team in the playoffs? Yes, the defense can be better. We talk about it all the time. Yes, the goaltender can make one more save. We talk about it all the time. But really what's been the problem is that the big boys dry up eventually, just like everybody's stars do at some point in time in a playoff run, and there's been no secondary scoring to speak of at all. And a third line centered by David Kampf can occasionally run into some offense for you, but it is nothing you can bank on, especially in the playoffs.
So far, my theory that, you know, this was sort of caretaker mode for Brad Treliving, and that Brendan Shanahan wanted a caretaker for this roster and for this core four, has been proven true to this point. Now there's a lot of time for for Treliving to put his stamp on this team, and he will. He's going to have to, because he can't just sign all of the guys who were unrestricted mm-hmm. free agents, because that's impossible under the salary cap with raises, like the one that David Kampf just got, $900,000, I believe. He was 1.5 for the previous two seasons. So if everyone's getting a raise, you can't bring the same team back. And he's going to have to find a way to get cheap talent as well. I mean, a name that just popped in my head, like, does it work with David Camp playing the fourth line, centering the fourth line at $2.4 million, if you can bring Jonathan Toews or someone of that ilk where they are past their prime, but mm-hmm. they can still play a third line center position, like that's what it feels like it's going to have to be, because you're right. You cannot pay premium for another center. I don't know if this takes Ryan O'Reilly completely off the board, but I just don't know how you can go into market and pay what guys are going to want
yep.
when they're at the height of their careers or they're in their premium earning windows, because you've already carved out so much money to the center ice position with $11 million for your two top guys. And now pretty premium money for a fourth line center, if he is your fourth yep. line center, with David Camp earning $2.4 million.
Well, and the Toews thing, and I know he's just a name you're throwing out there, but it goes back to something we talked about yesterday, was the idea of, and again, not to think that players across the league are sitting there going, oh, I'd never play for the Leafs. That bunch of chokers, they could never get it done. But they are not seen as the bright, young, sexy core. They are one of the sexy cores. But, you know, you look at a team like the Devils, and if you're a Jonathan Toews saying, I'm going to take a one-year prove-me deal, or not even a prove-me deal, I'm going to take a cheap one-year deal, I would love to have one more cup. Why would it be with the Leafs over a team like the Devils, especially given all the scrutiny that comes with playing in Toronto? This is the other side of it. We always talk, what was the famous Babs line of, we're going to make it safe and guys are going to come home. They did, and it felt safe. I don't know that it feels so safe anymore right now. This is a massive got-to-get-it-done year. Now, we've been saying that for three or four in a row, but I don't know that the Leafs are, I'm not saying they're 20th in the pecking order for teams or a player looking at a one-year win-now scenario, but they're not a slam-dunk top five the way they've always been.
No, you're right. More Leafs adjacent and Leafs news. We'll start with the adjacent, because I do think it's interesting. Kyle Dubas, of course, mm-hmm. general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins now, made one of the bigger deals yesterday.
Blue
acquiring right. Yeah, well, I guess has he not been to a Pittsburgh menswear store?
Call the Coyotes. They could hook him up with a team suit there.
It's black and yellow, bud. So Dubas free of financial shackle, which I think is a very, very interesting thing, at least in terms of a case study, mm-hmm. what he would do if, you know, you actually have money to spend and mm-hmm. you can actually take advantage of teams who are up against it. And of course, he did that just yesterday, getting Riley Smith, who mm-hmm. just won a Stanley Cup, who was just handed the Stanley Cup first, one of the original misfits, a guy who was really, really instrumental in the 6-year rise to prominence for the Vegas Golden Knights. He gets him basically for free for a third round pick to slot in there into the top six with Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby in that talented group there in Pittsburgh. An interesting move from Kyle Dubas to start his tenure.
Yeah. Anytime you have the cap space to do it and you can just grab a guy like Riley Smith for free, you have to do that. He's going to fit in well with that group. Just a bunch of winners there, and he is one of them. You know, I think there is a certain element to it, gives you credence across the league, and it gives you credence with a core like the Penguins, who have been through so much, and Smith is going to fit in perfectly there. He's kind of a classic guy that can play wing, play center, wherever you kind of need him to be. And with the Penguins, with the two great centers that they have, it obviously bodes well to have a guy who can flip over there. And yeah, for a third round pick, I think you do that anytime. And it's funny to me that it's Riley Smith, because, and I know this isn't why Kyle Dubas did it, it's because it's a great asset, but that guy felt like a Leaf killer. I feel like he scored every game against the Leafs. I definitely remember him potting a couple last time he was here last year. So good move by Dubas. Cannot knock it. And this is what teams with cap space are doing. You see it across the league, whether it's teams retaining and you're taking a player for free when you're looking at Hayes or Johansson. You see it here with the move Dubas makes.
Now, I haven't examined Pittsburgh's cap sheet. They are losing a couple guys. They've made some changes clearly, and Dubas is going to be able to move some bodies out and open up space for himself. But this is a deal, and this is the type of move that it seems like the Leafs were never able to take advantage of nope. in this rise since, you know, John Tavares came, and even before that when Austin Matthews was chosen first overall, I guess it was 7 seasons ago. This is the type of thing that really helps you improve a roster when you can use a really average asset in terms of futures capital mm-hmm. and a third round pick, which has, you know, I don't know what the percentage is, but it's probably under 10% and being a meaningful guy. You're not getting Easton Cowan.
I was going to say, what's 1-4% at the 28th overall, right?
Exactly. So it's what you wish you could do. It's what you wish you could do, especially if you're a team that's in a good spot. Like the New Jersey Devils continue this, right? They're in such a good spot with not only the contracts they've already signed with their core group, Bratt and Hughes being under contract, and Dougie Hamilton for a long time. Yeah. He sure as well. They're able to go out and just get a Tyler Toffoli, slip him into the roster, and it's really no problem at all. And I don't think Dubas is quite in that area. I think this is just a great move because Riley Smith is a good guy who might give you more value than, say, a Jason Zucker. But this is the move that the Maple Leafs just can't make. It's just impossible for them to make because any addition has to come with retention, and retention means premium assets. And we've seen this across the board. We've seen it in trade deadlines. We've seen it with a guy like Jake McCabe, where you had to pay a little more to get a guy like Jake McCabe because you're getting him for $2 million for multiple seasons after the rental.
Yeah, that is the new money ball in the NHL, is having... Now, this isn't the case with the Penguins. Obviously, these are guys on the back end of their deals that they signed a long, long time ago. But the new money ball in the NHL is having your great young players show hints of promise, but not steady production when they are due to sign their first deal out of their ELC. That is exactly what happened with the Devils. It's what happened with Hughes. It's what happened with Heischer. And that is what has allowed them to set up everything. Because guess what? If Jack Hughes comes out and rings the bell at even 10-5 or whatever it is, everybody else is creeping up a little bit more. And Timo Meier is an 8-8. He's probably 9-2 or whatever it is. And it all just, the whoever sets the cap ceiling on a team. Now, for everybody pounding the horns in their car driving, yes, it was Kyle Dubas who signed all those contracts. Yes, it was Kyle Dubas who put himself in that spot. So I don't want to make this seem like, oh, woe is him, this awful position. Now, flat cap, we don't need to go over all that again. But you mentioned the cap space the Penguins have to work with. So $15 million. They got to sign Jari. That is kind of the big piece of business. They do have to
add a goaltender, or
a goaltender of some regard. But then they got to do some filling in on the bottom six. But really, when you look at what they've got up front, they got Crosby, they got Malkin, they got Guentzel, they got Rust, who, you know, I'm not going to say he's a star player, but has been an important cog there. You throw in Riley Smith, Rickard Rakell. All of a sudden, the Penguins have a pretty decent forward group. If they can find the right goalie, it's amazing. We thought of them as this like dead capped out team, or at least that's how I thought of them when Dubas.
It felt like that the entire time Hextall was there.
And yeah, now $15 million in space. And again, you gotta do some work. You'd probably like to make at least one meaningful addition on the blue line. Stop me if you've heard that before regarding a Kyle Dubas team. But yeah, that's a great add. And you wonder if there's more to come here. You know, obviously it would have been the night to do it last night, you would have thought, but there's still more wheeling and dealing to be done. And there's, why wouldn't Kyle Dubas get in on I'm just spitballing here. Torrey Krug, they're dying to move him out of St. Louis, especially with the no move and everything happening there. I'm not saying Torrey Krug would waive to go there. I'm not even saying the Penguins are interested, but if that's another kind of distress asset, you can get some retention and get a great player or at least a good one. It's interesting to watch what they'll do the rest of the way. And again, to your point, a very different circumstance from the one Kyle Dubas put himself in, but he has in Pittsburgh.
Dubas disciples are going to be able to be pretty loud, because when you still have $15 million,
you might be talking to one.
When you still have $15 million after adding Riley Smith's full freight, an impact guy for a middle six on a team with a lot of top-end talent already, as you outlined, I mean, he's going to have an opportunity to really, really improve that roster, and it seems like he's already taken a step towards doing that. I'm going to forgo the Blue Jays discussion. We're going to forego the A-list, the Blue Jays discussion then, because I wanted to play a Kyle Davidson streeter yesterday. The whole world's seen it. It was on the broadcast last night. Our guys did a great job with it.
How would the whole world have reacted? And again, like, one day I'll move on from what if Kyle Dubas did this. How would the whole world have reacted to that exact same interview if it's Kyle Dubas doing his little Jim looks at the office from the camera of like, some people say I don't know what I'm talking about. It would have been a lot of shut up nerd is what it would have been if we would have seen that out of Kyle Dubas.
I'm not getting much nerd vibe from Kyle Davidson.
No, I'm not either. I'm just
pretty yoked there.
He let me tell you, that looked like a guy who was running around having fun on Broadway is what that looked like.
It looked like a guy who was at a bachelor party. That's exactly what it looked like. Okay, last one before we get to a break. Some reporting that Ryan Reeves may be a target for the Toronto Maple Leafs. What say you?
Okay. I would like to see the dollar. I would like to see the term. If it is a super cheap, come protect the core and be big, tough Ryan Reeves, all right, I'm here for it. I'm not against it, but I don't think you can prioritize this. Every move you're going to have has to fill an absolute concrete need, to which I'm not saying you could not use Ryan Reeves, but I don't believe he is that concrete need that you're filling there. So if it is a no term, cheap deal, absolutely. But if there are several suitors, why would that be the case? So I don't see the, again, would in a vacuum, would love him on the Leafs fourth line, but do not see a world where that vacuum exists.
Yeah, there was once a time not so long ago where Ryan Reeves was worth a first round pick. That is no longer. He's bounced around
only,
a lot.
Only if the Washington Capitals bully you, though. That's the only way.
Yeah, and listen, the Toronto Maple Leafs have been bullied a little
bit.
They've been bullied just a little bit, and we lauded and praised Luke Shen for just standing between benches at one point in their first-round series. That might have been the difference in getting through the first round. I mean, I think Ryan Reeves does have utility, but is Ryan Reeves just the next Wayne Simmonds in that he might be the guy that's just, you know, scratched when the game actually means more than just, hey, we need a little bit of muscle out there. I don't mind the addition if it's a guy that's going to be in the 13th, 14th forward variety. And for that reason, you can't pay him much. And I'm not sure Ryan Reeves is just going to accept the bare minimum to be a Toronto Maple Leaf. Although he's kind of a brand guy. He knows how to market himself.
Oh.
And of course, you market yourself when you play for the Maple Leafs.
Let me tell you, there is a very real possibility that Ryan Reeves on a cheap one-year deal would easily surpass that in off-ice income. It's very possible if it goes the way we all dream it could.
His beer is still selling out there in Vegas because he was able to get a little beer sponsorship, a little craft brewery
good
out there
him.
In Vegas when he was part of that team. As mentioned, we are going to skip the A-list, skip Davidson, do a little Blue Jays discussion because they reached the midway point with a 6-1 victory over the Giants yesterday, 44-37 at the halfway mark of the season. We'll do some takes from the first half of the Blue Jays season in what is not going to be the A-list after the break.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong,
bing bong,
bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Just kidding, it's time for some Blue Jays takes. Very, very quick Blue Jays takes because we are running out of runway on this first hour of The Fan Morning Show. As mentioned, 44-37 after a 6-1 victory over the San Francisco Giants. Blue Jays at the midway mark. Your primary takeaway from the first half of the season is what, Gunner?
Honestly, given everything that's happened, that's gone about as well as I could have possibly expected. Every single time somebody tells me the Blue Jays record this season, I'm floored. Wait, what? It's not 20 games below 500 the way we talk about this team. I am not telling you it's been a successful season. I'm not telling you you should feel happy right now. But I am telling you that if Vladdy struggled at the beginning of the, or has had the struggles he's had up to this point through certain runs of it, if there was a virus that ripped through the team, and most importantly, if the one of the two starters you can bank on the most just disappeared off the face of the earth and you're still above 500, I think most people wouldn't take it, but they'd say, wow, that could be so much worse. So honestly, seems like a weird place to end up at, and nobody should be happy with this. But given all the circumstances around this team, floored the record's as good as it is, quite honestly.
Honestly, I think that's a good point, because a lot of things have gone poorly, and it just might be an ill-fated season. Like, it's probably true that you cannot win a World Series with Alek Manoah just becoming someone who belongs in the Florida Complex League. Like, it may just be, and doesn't even belong there.
I was going to say, does not belong there yet.
Like, like getting scorched by 18 and 19-year-olds. And listen, the spin on him was interesting over the last couple days here because it was the Kyle Dubas, Cody Ceci thing where,
Yes. Oh,
we have data that supports and is a lot stronger than giving up 11 earned runs to 18 and
19-year-olds. How did that work out? Just, oh, not well.
Not well.
I still remember him missing the net by about 25 feet. It will never not stick out of my mind, Cody Ceci.
There you go. But I guess my take is, like, this could go either way still. Like, this could be an immensely successful season. This could be a year Blue Jays fans end up being very, very proud of. I think there's an opportunity here for what we have right now that is really, really working. This, like, small base where Bo Bichette's playing at his level and the pitching staff running a four-man rotation has been very, very good. I think there's a lot that can build on and a lot that could just snowball in an instant, and there could be help on the way. But it is, we're, like, 10... you know, we're 3, 4, 5, 6 series, dreadful series away from us being like pounding the table. You need to sell off parts. Mm-hmm. It all kind of hangs in the balance over here here in the next month. As much as the first half of the season has been extremely meaningful, it's really the back half that's going to tell the tale, obviously, because we still don't know after 81 games. This team, to me, remains undefined as we speak here at the midway part of the Blue Jays season.
Yeah, I think I will go on record saying all hope for this team having a season that anybody is happy with still rests on the shoulder. I was about to say shoulders, but really just the one of Alek Manoah. If he comes back, and it doesn't need to be next week, but if it's by August, if the whole next month goes and that's what allows them to get right, there is still a possibility for this team to make the playoffs and make a meaningful run. If he's not there, I just do not believe. And it's not in Berríos and it's not in Gausman. I am full believers in those guys, even Berríos now. I just do not believe you're going to get consistently good enough results from both Bassett and Kikuchi and whoever the fifth starter would be for that time to keep you afloat. So I think that it all rests on Manoah. We can sit here and talk about the offense and the defense and everything in between, but it really comes down to, are you going to have your 1B? Because if you don't have him, I don't really see the roadmap for this team making a run.
For now, Jays fans can take solace in the fact that, hey, they gambled a little bit last night. They went with the bullpen night last night, as opposed to Canada Day this weekend. Everybody else gets a little bit more rest. And guess what? Trevor Richards puts forth 3 strong innings. The rest of the bullpen comes through. They get a pretty dominant victory over the San Francisco Giants last night. They have a chance to win a series tonight, and they have a chance to put Yusei Kikuchi on the bump for Canada today. So the good times, at least for now, can continue to roll, and we will see on Manoah and the rest of the season as we enter the back half of the Blue Jays season. Another busy guest list for us today. We got Nick Kiprios after the break and Ben Wagner, Jackie Redmond, and Ailish Warfare from Nashville still to come on another busy edition of the Fan Morning Show.